Welcome, welcome, welcome. I would like to welcome you to episode 408 of the Unpopular Podcast. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Jalen Hunter. And here at the Unpopular Podcast, I normally ask you to agree with me and ask you to hear me out. The word fan is short for fanatic. A fan is somebody that has either a rational or irrational connection to a team or a player. Fandom is what makes sports great, especially college sports and sports where you have big games. Fans are usually why there's rivalry games, because of different fan bases. And one fan base usually doesn't like another fan base, or one fan of a team doesn't really like another fan of a team. Fans is a key component that drives sports. And for a lot of people, sports is so big and they're such a fan of said sport, said team, that a lot of people won't venture over or won't even entertain the thought of interacting with a person that is a fan of a quote-unquote rival. There's very, very, and I mean very, rare occasions where a player or a team is able to draw fans from the other side, meaning it's very rare that a fan of one team will like any player from a rival team. Very rare. In fact, it's almost not, it never happens. But when it does, it's noticeable. I'm gonna tell you a quick story, personal story. I am a huge North Carolina fan. I've talked about this on this podcast. If you know me, you know my favorite team is North Carolina, meaning I usually don't want anything to do with with Duke. I don't like Duke players. It's very rare for me to like the players when they leave Duke and go to the NBA or go to whatever's next in their life. I just don't like Duke because I was raised to like North Carolina, and I am a diehard North Carolina fan. It hurts me when North Carolina loses. I'm a basketball fan as well. Basketball is obviously my preferred sport, my favorite sport, and there was one time where I can say I was a fan of a Duke player while they were at Duke. I know it's crazy to think, but there was one time where I was a fan of a player that was at Duke when he was at Duke, and that is Zion Williamson. I was a fan. Some of the things that we saw Zion Williamson do, we've never seen before on a college basketball floor. I was a fan. I wanted to see Zion succeed. Maybe not over North Carolina, obviously, but I wanted him to succeed. And it kind of felt like Zion Williamson was a fan favorite in college sports, even if you like Duke or not. Why am I talking about this? I'm going to emphasize on the fact of there are players that kind of elevate themselves above a singular fan base to be beloved throughout all of sports or all of the sport. And that is exactly what Jason Kelce was. It's very rare that you'll find a person that almost universally people rave about. Not just for their play on the field or on the court, but for just their personality. I started with the whole fandom, fan base, and liking rivalries and liking rival players and stuff and how rare it is, because I'm also from the DMV. I was born and raised in the DMV, and I am a huge, unfortunately, huge Washington fan. And Jason Kelce, for people that know, played for the Philadelphia Eagles, which is a divisional rival. And you can ask, you can ask a lot of Washington fans, probably a lot of Dallas Cowboys fans, probably a lot of New York Giants fans. When you heard the name Jason Kelce, there was nothing but love. There was nothing but admiration. There was nothing but, I guess, lack of a better term, joy that you got when you talked about Jason Kelce. It's not just what he did on the field. Because if we do talk about what he did on the field, not only is he a surefire Hall of Famer, but he has put himself in that elite class as arguably greatest of, which is extremely hard to do. Seeing as though the sheer amount of people, the sheer amount of talent that has gone through sports, it's very hard to put yourself in any sport in that greatest of all time category. And while no, I'm not saying that Jason Kelce is the greatest football player of all time. But what I will say is, when we talk about the gold standard of centers in football, one of the most underrated positions, because they are obviously the center of the offensive line. They are the conductor telling the line what's coming next, where to go, who to block. They are the conductors. Jason Kelce has firmly put himself in arguably the greatest of all time conversation when we talk about centers in football. And this is coming from a Washington fan. I have nothing bad to say about Jason Kelce, and I'm congratulating Jason Kelce. He officially retired. There was rumors swirling, obviously, after their loss to the Buccaneers in the playoffs. But obviously, rumors are just rumors until we have confirmation about something. And he had a press conference, I think, 2 days ago, and he officially announced his retirement. And you know what I like most about Jason Kelce? I like the fact of no matter what situation, no matter wins, losses, no matter the predicament that he or his team is in, I don't think he ever changed. He was always him. He was always fun-loving. Yeah, he may have been upset from time to time, but he was always Jason Kelce. And the league, the NFL, is much better because he was in it. So I want to say shout out to Jason Kelce. He does something that a lot of people don't get to do, which is a blessing in and of itself, and that is retire on their own terms. Obviously, I'm sure Jason Kelce would have wished to win the Super Bowl maybe one more time. Jason Kelce probably wanted to go out, you know, on top. That obviously didn't happen. But to go out with all your lower, all your extremities working, and to go out on your own terms is a blessing. So I start this episode with congratulating and shouting out Jason Kelce for just being a good guy. I met him once. Not like met him in a sense of you're going to remember me. No. I was working a Washington game. And, you know, the pre-game workout stretching that happens. They were playing the Eagles, obviously. And Jason Kelce walks up and, you know, well, didn't walk up to me, but he's on the field. And, you know, I just say, hey, man, good game or good luck. He said, thanks, bro. And he walks off. That was my little Jason Kelce moment. But shouts out to Jason Kelce and congratulations for retiring on your own terms. Something that very rarely happens. He is a sure fire ballot Hall of Famer. And he will go down as one of the greatest centers to ever play in the NFL. So shouts out to him. I want to move over to basketball. And we are barreling down to the end of the regular season. And things are starting to shape up very interesting in both the Eastern Conference and Western Conference when we're looking at the playoff race and the play-in race. Teams that we didn't expect to be really good is really good. Teams that we expected to be really good may be kind of mediocre. What I wanted to do is I'm going to look at all the teams in both the East and Western Conference, all from, you know, the top one seed to the 10th seed. And what I think is interesting about this year is, especially when we talk about the West, the play-in teams are a lot more interesting because of history and because of just who is in the play-in teams or play-in. They're going to be a little bit more interesting when we talk about the playoff race. But I'm going to go from the first seed to the 10th seed in both Eastern Conference and Western Conference and decide, is this team a pretender or a contender when we talk about an NBA championship? Obviously, there's only going to be one winner, but I'm going to determine if this team can win or not. I want to start with the Eastern Conference because to me, the Eastern Conference is a little less wide as not only the Western Conference, but as it was originally throughout the season. You know, injuries play a crazy part in shaping an NBA season or an NFL season, any sport. If there's a major injury to a player, to multiple players, that's ultimately going to affect playoff seeding. Is going to affect who gets in, who gets out. That's just the... It also affects the playoffs as well because some players are unable to play in the postseason. So injuries play a huge part. And injuries play a huge part in the playoff race to a certain extent in the Eastern Conference. I'm going to start with some obviously are more obvious than others. So I'm going to go from 1 to 10. And again, the reason why I'm also focusing on the play-in is because the play-in teams are extremely interesting, especially when we go over to the West. But we'll get into it. Let's start with the Boston Celtics. The number one seed in the NBA has the best record in the NBA and the number one, you know, seed in the East. I've been saying this probably since the beginning of the year. The Boston Celtics as a whole is the best team in basketball. And I've gotten to that point where if they don't win it this year, I don't know when they will win it. I'm not saying that the window will be closed for the Boston Celtics, but what I'm saying is everything is lining up for Boston. They have the best record. They're the best team. You have two young stars, one superstar. You have, they are the deepest team in basketball. And every component that you need to win a championship, they have. They have the wily vet. They have the superstar. They have the star players. They have the incredible role players. Boston, for sure, is a contender. And to me, the best, as we sit here today, the best contender in the NBA. Now, if they, obviously the playoffs are different, and when we get to the playoffs, that's much more much more focused, much more calculated as far as who you play, how you play, you know, series and everything. But Boston is the best team in basketball. As we sit here today, I mean, they're the first team, I think, in NBA history that has beaten three opponents by more than 50 points. Or 50 or more points in a season. Like, come on now. They're from Jason Tatum to Jaylen Brown to Kristaps Porzingis, who is injured right now, but he's supposed to be coming back soon, to Jrue Holiday, to Derek White, to Al Horford. They have a squad. And it's very hard for me to see any team beating them in a seven-game series. Beating them four times in seven games is going to be tough. Now, again, like we'll talk about with a few teams, injuries can play a part, and I don't wish an injury upon anyone. But as currently constructed and how they're playing right now, not only is Boston a contender in the playoffs, but they're the best team in basketball by a country mile, in my opinion. Then you get to the Milwaukee Bucks. And the Milwaukee Bucks is a very interesting case. It's very interesting listening to people talk about the Milwaukee Bucks now compared to when they talked about them maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago. The Bucks have gotten much better. They've won six straight. They're undefeated since All-Star break. And it looks like they're coming together in terms of figuring out what Doc Rivers, you know, his scheme and how to operate his scheme. Looks like Damian Lillard's coming around. The team looks much better than it did at before All-Star break. I will say that. And what's interesting about this is they've played much better defense since the All-Star break. They, again, they've got their stars going. That is Giannis Antetokounmpo. That is Damian Lillard. This team is starting, since the All-Star break, has looked like the team that we expected them to look like when they acquire somebody like Damian Lillard. And when we just look at Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo, of course they're contenders. They also have Brook Lopez, who, you know, is a defensive anchor they have Chris Middleton. They have a solid rotation. But one of the biggest reasons why I'm going to put them in contender solely out of respect for Giannis and Damian Lillard. But I'm very hesitant to put them in a contender role because of Doc Rivers and his track record. Again, not only is Boston the best team in basketball, but you also have a coach that has historically had some of the most talented players in basketball in his entire career, whether we talk about Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Tracy McGrady, James Harden, Joel Embiid, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin. He's had some of the most, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, he's had some of the most talented players the league has ever seen. If you build a team with some of the talent that Doc Rivers has coached over the years, you'd damn near have an all, in fact, you'd for sure have an all-star team. Yet and still, he has only one NBA championship. And there is a long history of collapses in the playoffs. Now, it's hard for me to, and I don't want to be that person to not allow somebody to grow. I don't want to be that person to not allow someone to change my mind because of stuff that has happened in the past. I'm very optimistic, and I understand that this is a new team for Doc Rivers. But I do understand, and I am witnessing some of the things that Doc Rivers has struggled with over his career. He's kind of struggling with the Bucks. The difference between then and now, obviously, is the Bucks have two generational players. And while they can overcome it now and they look good now, I need to see what they look like in the playoffs. That, to me, is the only time we can really cement if the Bucks is a contender or pretender. Because right now, obviously, with the players, personnel that they have, they are contenders. But we need to see in the playoffs. And that's honestly the only team I can really look at and say, hey, I can't really have a definitive yes or no, because I know who their coach is and I know that things are much different in the playoffs. So that's the only caveat I have with the Bucks. They're the only team, honestly, I need to see in the playoffs before I can submit if they're a pretender or contender. But for right now, because they have Giannis and because they have Damian Lillard, I'm going to say they're contenders. One of the hottest teams, even though they are coming off a loss, but one of the hottest teams going into All-Star break was the Cleveland Cavaliers, and is currently the Cleveland Cavaliers. Again, they are on a one-game losing streak, but they have been great. The Cleveland Cavaliers is a very interesting team, and a team that, if they do ultimately compete and make it to an NBA championship, they will be a very rare, their road will be very rare. We're going to talk about this a lot more in the Western Conference, but when we talk about the history of the NBA Finals, when we talk about the history of the playoffs, veteran-led teams, veteran teams in general, are usually the ones that win. Your margin of error in the playoffs shrinks considerably because teams are now solely focused on you. You don't have, you know, the Washington Wizards one night, then the next night you'll have the Toronto Raptors, then the next night you'll have the Golden State Warriors. No, you're in a playoff series, so the team that you're playing not only is not a scrub team, but they're solely focused on you, just like you're solely focused on them. So there's no off games. And when you get to that point, you want veterans that have not only just veterans, but you want good veterans, good players that have been through it, that experience, that knows the mental focus, the type of play that you need to ultimately succeed and advance in the playoffs. While the Cleveland Cavaliers, they are led by a veteran, which is Donovan Mitchell, they have a plethora of young players, whether that's Evan Mobley, whether that's Allen, who is still younger, Darius Garland, Okoro. They have a litany of young players. And a lot of their veterans outside of Donovan Mitchell don't really play that much minutes. So if they were to win, and one of the biggest reasons why I'm calling them a pretender is because, again, we've seen the roadmap. Now, they could change my mind. They do have some pieces that have, you know, been very integral to playoff runs, whether that's George Niang, whether that's Max Strus, whether that's Tristan Thompson, who is one of their veterans. Actually, no, he's suspended. So I think that this team is good. And I'm not going to disrespect the Cleveland Cavaliers, but I just don't think that they're on this. They're on a deep playoff run level, and because of that, I'm going to say the Cleveland Cavaliers are pretenders. I do think defensively they can be really good, especially protecting the rim when you have Allen and when you have Mobley. But outside of that, and obviously Donovan Mitchell is one of the best scorers in basketball, but outside of that, I just don't know when you get to a playoff series, which we've seen time and time again. I don't know if they'll be able to advance. And on top of that, I'm looking solely at Donovan Mitchell, and there are things that obviously he would have to focus on when we get to the playoffs, seeing as though we've seen some playoff collapses from Donovan Mitchell himself, whether that's with the Cleveland Cavaliers or the Utah Jazz. But something that doesn't really get discussed as much, which we see a lot in the playoffs, is height is important in basketball. There's a reason why there's the saying is you can't teach height. Height almost gets you one step ahead of somebody else. Now, I'm not saying that Donovan Mitchell is a small, like, I'm not saying a smaller player can't win. But you put Donovan Mitchell in a playoff series where you have a 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", point guard, that's going to be tough for him. He already is at a deficiency when we talk about height and defense. But, in fact, how tall is Donovan Mitchell? Donovan Mitchell is 6'3". And obviously what helps him is his incredible knack of scoring the ball. But that could be tough. But I have the Cleveland Cavaliers as pretenders just because of their youth. The New York Knicks. The New York Knicks is a very interesting team because I started this by talking about injuries. And I talked about how injuries can honestly shape a team. And injuries can play a major part, sometimes play the biggest part in a team's ability to advance in the playoffs. The New York Knicks is probably the number one team that is being affected by injuries right now. Now, obviously, I know what people are thinking. That one team, which we're going to talk about in a second, but as we speak, almost every single major player, important player on the New York Knicks is injured. Whether we talk about Jalen Brunson, their best player, Julius Randle, their second best player, OG Adenobi. Now, yes, Josh Hart has been really good for this team. Dante DiVincenzo has been really good for this team. But when your three best play, in fact, there's more. Let me give me a second. I'm gonna tell you all the players right now that are important to this team that are currently injured. Again, Jalen Brunson. He's not injured, but he hasn't been right since he tweaked his ACL, and that's Isaiah Hartenstein. Mitchell Robinson, but Mr. Robinson kind of stays hurt, unfortunately. Julius Randle and OG Adonobi. Now, perfectly healthy. Means you get back Jalen Brunson, you get back OG Adonobi, you get back Julius Randle. Then yes, I shockingly think that the New York Knicks are contenders. But it's very hard when you have to put that caveat saying if healthy. Because one thing that I know about any sport is you don't get healthier unless it's you're already hurt and you're rehabbing, but you don't get healthier from day one of the season to the last day or last day of the regular season. That just doesn't happen. So we'll have to see, but if they're completely healthy, the way that they play defense and the way that, Jalen Brunson scores the ball, Julius Randle can score the ball, Josh Hart and his defense and his rebound ability, Dante DiVincenzo is putting up shots, Alec Burks, Bojan Bogdanovic, I think that they can be contenders. But, which is, it's tough to say for any team, but that's only barring, obviously, health. Because as currently constructed, there's no way in heaven or hell you think that the Knicks can win a championship when their three best players are not hurt or not healthy. But if they're able to get healthy by the playoffs, I think that they can be contenders. The Philadelphia 76ers. Now, I know I just said that the Knicks is the one team that is probably dealing with injuries the most. Now, yes, the Philadelphia 76ers have the biggest injury in basketball right now, meaning they have Joel Embiid being out. He was the front runner by a long shot in the MVP race before he got hurt. Now, the reason why I'm saying that the Knicks are probably more affected than the Philadelphia 76ers when we talk about injuries, because the Philadelphia 76ers have played really good without Joel Embiid. Now, yes, there's a night and day difference. They're not terrible, but they're not as good. But you still have Tyrese Maxey, who has emerged as a star. Tobias Harris has been playing really well. Paul Reed has been playing really good. This team, Buddy Hield can play. Kelly Oubre, like they have a there's a the team that's currently constructed. No, they are definitely pretenders. But if they're able to get Joel Embiid back, and if Joel Embiid is able to play at the level that he was playing before, the meniscus and playing on the MVP level, then I think that the 76ers are for sure contenders. That is only barring Joel Embiid being there. Now, they are saying that he's starting, on-court workout, so that's a good sign. But again, Tyrese Maxey, as great as he's been, I still think they're pretenders until they get Joel Embiid back. Orlando Magic. The Orlando Magic is one of those teams that they're a good story. And it kind of feels like they're ahead of schedule when we talk about where they're supposed to be from where they are. Then when you get pieces like Paolo Banchero, who played for the Olympics, Franz Wagner, both Wagners actually, that played for, overseas in the Olympics. You expect them to be good someday, but not right now because they're still young. You also have Cole Anthony. You have Jalen Suggs. You have Markel Fultz. This is an extremely young team. And for them being so young, you don't expect them to be as good as they are, especially defensively. But the Orlando Magic is a very good team. Now, I do think that they're pretenders, and I don't think they're pretenders solely because, you know, them, even though they kind of fit in that young category. And what I just said about veterans in the playoffs. But I'm also putting in pretenders because in a 7-game series, it's tough for me to see them going against a Milwaukee Bucks or going against a Boston Celtics or going against New York Knicks or going against the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, the sweet spot in the playoffs is that 6 seed. The 6 seed, because they'll have to play the 3 seed. And they can avoid the number 1 seed, I think, until the conference finals. And they're right now in the 6 seed. They'll be going against the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think that would be a great matchup, but I'm still gonna say pretenders for the Orlando Magic just because of their youth and because scoring wise, I don't know if they can keep up with some of the teams that are above them. So now we get into the play-in teams for the East. And the most interesting play-in team is the Miami Heat, the team that just found themselves in the NBA Finals a year ago or a season ago. Everything on paper spells pretenders for the Miami Heat. They've struggled all year with consistency. Jimmy Butler has been in and out the lineup due to injury. Bam Adebayo has been okay. Jazz has been great, but he's been okay. He was an all-star. They have a bunch of role players that you really don't know about. I mean, Deb Duncan Robinson, Tyler Herro has been good. Jaime Jaquez, he would be the rookie of the year if Chet Holmgren and Victor Wembanyama wasn't there. This, everything spells pretenders for Miami outside of the fact of we know the history of Miami when they get to the postseason. And we know the history of Eric Spoelstra. We know the history of Jimmy Butler and how they lock in. And until I see it happen, they're contenders. I know it's, I mean, they're the 7th seed, but I think that just out of respect of what we see in the playoffs and Jimmy Butler is a thing. Eric Spoelstra being one of the best coaches in basketball history is a thing. I think the Miami Heat are contenders, honestly, even at the 7th seed. So then you have the Indiana Pacers. To me, the Indiana Pacers is they're one of the best offenses in basketball when they're clicking all cylinders. When you have Tyrese Haliburton throwing the ball all over the place. In a good way, leading the league in assist. When you have Miles Turner protecting the rim, also shooting it from three, and you still have Obi Toppin that's going crazy. Like, this team is one of the best offensive teams in basketball. They're averaging, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, they're averaging the most points per game in the NBA, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. 123 points a game. The biggest reason why they're pretenders, though, is they do not play a lick of defense. While they average 123.3 points a game, they're giving up 122 points. And since All-Star break, I don't know what happened. You know what it is? Since All-Star break, Tyrese Haliburton his shot has just disappeared. He has not been able to shoot to save his life. And I'm trying to tell you, man, all that juju that he had was ran out in the All-Star game. The man had like 5-6 threes in the All-Star game, maybe even 8. But I still think he's pretty good. I just, this team, as great as they are offensively, which they're really good, they do not play a lick of defense. And one thing that we know also, outside of the whole veteran thing I was talking about in the playoffs, you need to be a good defensive team. I don't think there hasn't been a team in recent memory that has not been good defensively that has won a championship. In fact, I think since 2000, there's only been two teams there's only been two teams that have been outside the top 10 in defense. And I think that was last year's Denver Nuggets. And I think they were like 11th or 12th or something. And the 03 Lakers, I believe. Outside of that, you have to be top 10 in defense. They're, I think, the worst defense. They're one of the worst defenses in basketball. God damn. I'm looking at these standings and, yo, the Wizards give up 125 points a game. Sheesh. God damn. But, yeah, because they don't play no defense, I have the Indiana Pacers as pretenders. I can get these two out the way quickly, and that is the Chicago Bulls and Atlanta Hawks. I get extremely frustrated talking about the Chicago Bulls because the Chicago Bulls is the pure definition. If you look in a dictionary and look up average, you might see Chicago Bulls as a synonym. The Chicago Bulls are the pure definition of average, mediocre, middle of the pack. And they've been like that for a while now. I don't know how long it's going to take for them to understand that a team that is led by DeMar DeRozan, and this is no offense to them, this is just facts. So far, in their entire career, a team that is led by DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine is not taking you to the promised land. I don't care how good Alex Caruso is. I don't care how, you know, Kobe White could possibly win an award for, you know, most improved. I don't know. He's been great this year. This team is mediocre. And going up against any team in the playoffs, I see them getting out of here quickly. They don't play that good a defense. Even though the defense has been better over the last few games, they don't play that good a defense. They don't score that well either. No. And the same thing goes with the Atlanta Hawks. I understand that Trae Young is hurt right now. Even with Trae Young, I don't have to be completely honest, depending on if they play in the playoffs, I don't see them winning more than one game. And I honestly don't see them getting out the play-in because as currently constructed, they would have to play the Miami Heat in the first game of the play-in. I don't see the Atlanta Hawks beating them, even with Trae Young. Because the Atlanta Hawks give up 122.7. But they're the second worst, if I'm not mistaken. They're the second worst defense in basketball. The Atlanta Hawks. They give up the second most points. Pretenders. So, that's the Eastern Conference, man. Let's go over to the West. The West is more interesting because of the standings and especially looking at that play-in. But, like I said, let's go over the Western Conference and see if these teams are contenders or pretenders. We're going to start with the Minnesota Timberwolves, who's the number one seed in the West. The Minnesota Timberwolves is a interesting, exciting team to watch this year. You have extremely young talent in Anthony Edwards, who you can look up and be one of the best players in basketball in a few years. Karl-Anthony Towns is still young. Rudy Gobert, he's more than likely going to win the Defensive Player of the Year for the third or fourth time. This team is the best, if I'm not mistaken. This team is the best defense in basketball. They're giving up 107 points a game. The thing that I'm wrestling with is the youth part. I talked about this with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Youth usually does not win in the playoffs. And they're one of the youngest teams in basketball. Now, yes, they have, you know, Naz Reid. They have Mike Conley. They do have vets. They have Kyle Anderson. But their core, their most important pieces are young. And I'm not sure how they will fare in a playoff series, seeing as though last year they pretty much got ran out of here. Now, obviously, it was against the Denver Nuggets, who ultimately won the championship, but they're out of here in what, one or five games? I don't want to call it's tough calling. I will say contender because of their defense. Now, while yes, they are a very young team, and that definitely gives me cause for concern, I did just talk about you have to be one of the best defenses in basketball to usually win a championship, and they are the best. So I'm going to say contender just because of their defense, but contender with an asterisk because they are young, and I need to see how they fare in a playoff series. I do think that last year helps them navigate through a playoff series and understand the intensity, seeing as though a lot of the players that they have now were in the playoff series last year. So I'm going to say contender. Oh, boy. The Oklahoma City Thunder. It's crazy to think, but you possibly have the MVP in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Yes, that they are way ahead of schedule when we talk about how good they were projected to be comparing as to how good they are now. Yes, they're one of the best offenses in basketball. While they're not the best defense, they're middle of the pack defense. But I think, and we kind of saw this with the Sacramento Kings last year, youth can really hurt you. And I don't mean that in a bad, I mean it as, when you have a team that isn't really experienced in that playoff intensity, and that is a thing, that's the reason why it's called playoff intensity, it can really hit you hard. And I think that I think Oklahoma City Thunder, as great as they are, with the Jalens and Chet Holmgren and Shai, I think that they're pretenders. Because of they're just young, and they don't know what they don't know. That kind of the Detroit Lions in football. While they're good, you don't know that you're not supposed to do this. I think that this is going to be an incredible team for years to come, especially if they're able to keep their core. But as of right now, even though they are the second in the West, and the West is so loaded, that's another reason why I have the Oklahoma City Thunder as a pretender. You have the Denver Nuggets. This can be pretty fast. Even though they're third in the West, to me, there's two teams. When they're firing on all cylinders, there's two teams that's above the rest, and that is the Boston Celtics and the Denver Nuggets. We saw that multiple times this year, and obviously we saw that last year with the championship. Denver, they have arguably the best player in basketball, Nikola Jokic. They're a huge team. I think their shortest player, their smallest player that really gets burned is what, Christian Braun or Jamal Murray, like you have when you trot out when you trot out Aaron Gordon and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, like this is a huge team. And they're also skilled. They're unselfish. They know how to play. They can put points on the board. They're one of the, yeah. And they're on a 6-game winning streak. Yeah, I have the Denver Nuggets, one of the best teams in basketball. And when they're firing on all cylinders, which we've seen multiple times this year, they are head and shoulders above anybody in the Western Conference. And it would be them and the Boston Celtics and a very distant third. So, yes, for sure, the Denver Nuggets are contenders. A team that the narrative and the talk around them obviously changed from when they acquired James Harden to now is the LA Clippers. And I think there are some glaring issues with the Clippers, whether we talk about size. I mean, yes, when they're completely healthy, it's going to be tough to beat this team. But when they don't have Zubac, when you have to rely a lot on, you know, the defense, which they do play good defense, don't get me wrong, but the defense by Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, it's going to be tough. And Mason Plumlee, that's tough. And on top of that, Russell Westbrook, he wasn't the greatest sixth man, but he was extremely important for this team. And he has a dislocated hand, I think. I think that when they're firing all cylinders, especially now that they've kind of got it together with James Harden and playing with that core, I think that the Clippers are obviously contenders. And to be honest with you, I think that if this doesn't work, it's going to be hard for me to, I talked about this in a previous episode before. This is going to be very tough for me to see this iteration of the Clippers come back if they don't at least make it to a championship. Maybe I'm not saying you have to win, especially seeing what the Boston Celtics are playing like, but if you don't make it to a championship, it's hard for me to see someone like Paul George staying or someone like James Harden staying. You know, it's going to be tough, but yeah, I think that the LA Clippers are for sure contenders. The Pelicans. The Pelicans are one of the best offenses in basketball, especially shooting the three. They're one of the best three-point shooters or three-point shooting teams in the NBA. And it really depends on the play of Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram. They play okay together, but you can tell like they're better off apart. And I think that that's probably going to be addressed in this offseason. But this team runs as Zion and Brandon Ingram take them. And I don't think that they're contenders. It's hard for me to see them beating any of the teams previously named in the West in a 7-game series. So I think that the Pelicans are contenders. I think that they could be good. Don't get me wrong. Like they're a good defensive team. They only give up 112 points a game. But it's when you're depending on someone that has a history of injury, it's tough for me to say that you're a contender. Even though Zion is pretty good, and Brandon Ingram, but you know, I have them as pretenders. The Phoenix Suns. Now, the Phoenix Suns, to me, and I talked about this before, but the Phoenix Suns is one of the hardest teams to determine if they're a playoff or if they're a contender or pretender because they're trying to go against history. They're trying to go against the grain. And what I mean by that is they're trying to win solely on having the best offense. And what I think that they're trying to do, but they don't understand that it's much deeper than that, is I think they're trying to replicate the Golden State Warriors teams that won with Kevin Durant, when they had Steph, when they had Klay, when they had Draymond Green and Kevin Durant. You know, you get Kevin Durant with Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, Bol Bol is playing minutes now, like, and Nurkic. This team offensively can be terrific. This team offensively can be scary. The issue is defensively. If they do ultimately win or advance deep in the playoffs, it's solely because their offense is humming and firing on all cylinders. I mean, you have three players that can erupt for 50 on any given night. Three. I want to say pretender so bad because of that defensive end of this floor. But it's hard because, again, you have KD and Devin Booker and Bradley Beal, and I know how good they can be. And any team that has Kevin Durant, it's hard for me to say that you're a pretender. But I will say it for the Phoenix Suns. You're a pretender. It's because, I mean, think about it. If the playoffs started now, you'd have to play the Denver Nuggets. Yeah, no. No. You need to get... nah. As much as I like Kevin Durant, as much as I know how good this team can be offensively, defensively is what's going to kill them, in my opinion. So I have the Phoenix Suns as pretenders. Another team that is a pretender in my eyes is the... And one of the biggest reasons why, and I talked about this a little bit, one of the biggest reasons why we need to talk about the play-in teams is because of the West. And the West have four play-in teams that could drastically swing the playoffs. And that is the Sacramento Kings, the Dallas Mavericks, the LA Lakers, and the Golden State Warriors. Teams that have history of winning, recent history of winning, and... It's going to be very interesting come playoff times if these teams make it, if some of these teams can get out of the play-in. It's going to be interesting. To start with the Kings, I'm going to have to say pretenders. The Kings are in, like, we thought that they were going to be the next Golden State Warriors. Seeing as though they had an incredible playoff series against the Warriors last year, they went to 7 games. Ultimately, they didn't win, but, you know. It was a great series. The issue with the Kings is there's too many games that they just look horrible. They look like they, even with De'Aaron Fox, Monk, Murray, Herter, Sabonis, they just look, they can't score and they can't stop anybody. And I just don't know. I don't think I've seen enough from them that I have faith in them to go on a deep playoff run, honestly. And because of that, I have the Sacramento Kings as pretenders. The Dallas Mavericks are one of those teams that's defying logic, in my opinion. The Dallas Mavericks shouldn't be... When they're at their apex, when they were as good, like they were one of the best teams in basketball for a good portion this year, they're really only led by two people, and that is Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. While Derek Lively has been really good as a defensive anchor, they don't really have another offensive piece. Their next best offensive piece is Tim Hardaway Jr., and he averages like 16 a game. They should not have enough to compete. I don't think they have enough to compete. When you look at their stats, they're literally a average team. They give up, or they average pretty much 119 points a game. They give up 118. While Luka is Luka, he's incredible. He leads the league in scoring. Kyrie Irving is still Kyrie Irving. He's incredible. He's probably this best Robin in basketball. I don't know if they'll be able to, like when you play a team that is equally offensively or better, more offensive weapons, it's going to be tough. And if you're able to lock down Luka, which obviously is easier said than done, I don't know how you're going to be able to advance in the playoffs. So because of that, as shocking as it is, especially coming from a team that was number one or two in the West for a good portion, I have the Dallas Mavericks as pretenders. Now you have the Los Angeles Lakers. I think that the Lakers have a bunch of advantages that you could say make them contenders. Then they have a lot of disadvantages that you can say for sure, oh yeah, they're pretenders. For instance, or for one, they're one of the biggest teams in basketball. And LeBron James, they've trotted out a lineup with LeBron James, who's like 6'9", 6'10", playing center. Like, I don't know, playing a point guard. Like, they're one of the biggest teams. Austin Reeves and, you know, Anthony Davis, Jackson Hayes, D'Angelo Russell. They're one of the biggest teams in basketball. And as we saw the other night against the Oklahoma City Thunder, they can impose their will physically on a team. And that can spell doom for a lot of teams. That's kind of how they beat the Golden State Warriors last year in the second round of the playoffs. They just were bigger than them. Anthony Davis dominated. LeBron James dominated. They could not answer when we talk about size with the Golden State Warriors. So with that, and obviously you have LeBron James, who is still one of the best players in basketball. You have Anthony Davis. When he comes to play, he is by far one of the best players in basketball. The issue is that's kind of where the buck stops. Now, D'Angelo Russell has been playing great majority of this year. So if you get that type of D'Angelo Russell in the playoffs, that's definitely something. Austin Reeves hasn't been playing that well, but you know, he's still able to give you some good minutes. Rui Hachimura has been good. Torian Prince has been good from shooting the ball. This team has an avenue to get back to the Western Conference Finals and ultimately possibly get to the championship. The issue is, however, they still are not a good shooting team. And they're an average team when we talk about defense to offense. They score 117 points a game. They give up 117 points a game. So they're very average. On any given night, they can blow a team out. On any given night, they can get blown out. That is not the type of consistency that you want going into the playoffs. So I'm going to say that the LA Lakers, I'm going to say pretenders, because you get them in a seven-game series against the Clippers. I don't think they'll win. The Denver Nuggets, I don't know. Phoenix Suns, I don't know. Minnesota Timberwolves, because of their defense, possibly because they're young. But I don't know. I just don't – a team that can't shoot. I don't know the last team in this era that has won a championship that really couldn't shoot the ball to outside of the Lakers in the bubble. So – yeah, I'm going to go with pretenders for the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors. Now, I've talked about the components that you need to winning a championship, and one of them obviously is a star, a superstar, and the Golden State Warriors have that. And the Golden State Warriors have been one of the best teams, even though they did just get smacked by 50 against the Celtics. They've been one of the best teams since the All-Star break. And actually, going into the All-Star break as well. Getting Draymond Green back did wonders for this team, especially defensively. And Klay Thompson accepting his role to come off the bench. And he is kind of flourished. I mean, he still has those Klay Thompson games like, ugh, like 3 points. But he has played much better, and I will give him credit for that. The issue with the Golden State Warriors is their lows are very low. and their highs are very high. Like, they can still shoot you out the gym. You still have Steph. Klay can still hit buckets. Brandon Pozinski, he can hit shots. Draymond Green is hitting at a good clip. They can still shoot you out the gym. And defensively, there are nights where defensively they are incredible. But more times than not, they've been pretty average. And it seems like there's still a lot on Steph Curry's back. Like this, I don't think that they're champion. Maybe if they go against a younger team like the Oklahoma City Thunder, maybe the Minnesota Timberwolves, because of their youth, the Golden State Warriors might have an advantage. But when you talk about the Clippers, the Nuggets, I don't see it. I think that they're pretenders, not because of Steph, but because the rest of the team, honestly. Now, I think that they are going to make the play-in, possibly the playoffs, but I don't see it. Just because of what I've seen this whole year. Not to mention, ain't no telling when Andrew Wiggins is coming back. Now, yes, Jonathan Kuminga has been their second best player almost all season, and his emergence. And that's another thing. They're depending on a lot of young players to help them advance in the playoffs, whether that's Jonathan Kuminga, whether that's Moses Moody, who hasn't come around yet. Trayce Jackson, it's going to be tough. And then Chris Paul, they also don't have any height. And that's something that killed them against the Lakers. They're not having any height, especially going up against the Nuggets, kills them. Going up against the Clippers kills them. Going up against the Timberwolves kind of kills them. Going up against the Lakers kills them. So I just think that the Golden State Warriors are pretenders. That's my list, man. Dang. Who do you think from the Western Conference is the biggest contender? Who do you think is the biggest pretender? In the Eastern Conference, who do you think is a contender or pretender? Let me know. Do I want to talk about it? I'm going to talk about it. You know, I try hard to stay away from racial topics on this podcast. Not because I don't believe there is a clear racial divide still. But because I'm not the most... I know how I feel, and I can clearly see when something's right and wrong. But I just kind of like to stay away from it, because there's a voice in the back of my head sometimes saying, like, who are you? Who are you to talk about something this prominent, this important? You know, you're not a... Who are you? So there are times when I kind of stay clear from that. Not saying I don't have feelings about it. Not saying I don't have emotions. I don't have opinions about some things that I see that is racially driven or racially motivated, but a lot of times I don't think my voice is as important, and I don't think my voice is needed a lot of times in these conversations. So I've stayed clear. I've kind of avoided talking about them on the podcast as much as I could. But I needed to talk about this story. So the topic is the University of Florida eliminates their pretty much entire DEI, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion positions due to the new state rule. One of the reasons why I've always found HBCUs important is because the difficulties it is to navigate and to integrate yourself at PWIs. And for a lot of people, going to a PWI is the first time that they are pretty much shoulder to shoulder with a different race. And HBCUs allow people of color to not only learn with people that they're familiar with and people that they recognize themselves with, but it allows the learning environment to be to improve for them. There's a thing that is true. Anxiety is at an all-time. Studies show, it's not just me. Studies show that African Americans' anxiety is a lot higher at PWIs than it is at HBCUs. Not because the curriculum is harder, not because they're not smarter or they're not smart. It's because of the racial anxiety that you get from PWIs. I'm almost sure that you can ask 10 African Americans that went to a PWI, and I'm almost sure that there were instances where they were uncomfortable in one or more situations. And I added that, and I put that in there is because whether you want to believe it or not, and or you want to close your eyes to it or not, more and more universities, organizations, schools are trying to get back to what it was before affirmative action. They're trying to divide. Their students. And trust and believe, whether you want to believe it or not, getting rid of your DEI programs and positions at a PWI is for sure going to affect the African American or diversity, equity, and inclusion. The different races that it targets. I've said this before, and in my opinion, this is clear as day. One of the most frustrating dynamics about sports, especially in colleges, is they're so ready and they're so welcoming for African Americans to play sports, to be the face of their program as far as an athlete. They're going to get the 5-star recruit because he's the best player. And they don't care what color or race is. If you have that 5-star behind you, or if you can help their program, they're all for it. But when it comes to front office positions, when it comes to head coaching positions, when it comes to higher up positions, oh, whoa. Hold your horses there, brother. Be happy with what we give you. I don't care if you think I'm off. I don't care if you think that I'm just quote unquote race baiting or click baiting. Why do you think, that the University of Florida eliminates all diversity, equity, and inclusion positions? You're telling me if, because I know what some, I know what someone's going to say. It's probably losing the school money, right? Or the school doesn't have funding for that anymore. Okay. So you're telling me that there's nothing else. There's not another program that is losing the University of Florida money. You're telling me that there's not another program that, or a position that the University of Florida couldn't find to get rid of. They get rid of the most important position for including African Americans and other races. That's the one they get rid of. Whether you want to believe it or not, schools, especially PWIs, are trying their hardest to get back to what it looked like before affirmative action. And now more than ever is why I think it is vital and important to support HBCUs. Because there's going to be a time when you're going to look up and having a 4.0, having a 3.5, being a valedictorian, being one of the best in your class doesn't matter anymore. It's going to go back to, well, what do you look like? And then you're going to look up and you're going to be like, how did so-and-so get in, but not me? Or you're going to get to one of these schools, and because you don't have any programs to help you cope with dealing with stuff like this, dealing in associating yourself with other races, you're going to see the dropout rate go up, especially amongst people that are of other diversities. For anyone that says that I'm off, for anyone that says that I don't know what I'm talking about, or I'm quote unquote race baiting, obviously you're not opening your eyes. Because it's clear as day. One thing, the last thing I will say, someone is going to tell you exactly what they feel about you by their actions. In the University of Florida, the state of Florida is showing you exactly what they feel about you. Because again, you're telling me diversity, equity, and inclusion is hurting the University of Florida that much. Okay. There you have it. That's been today's episode of the Unpopular Podcast. I truly, truly appreciate you guys. If you want an Unpopular Podcast shirt, hoodie, sweater, long sleeve joggers, the link is in the description below. I have multiple different colors, multiple different designs. Get your Unpopular Podcast merch today. Also, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'm trying to get as many subscribers as possible, and it definitely means a lot. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. If you like the content, please subscribe. Also, subscribe to the DSPs if you are a DSP listener. I understand that not everybody that supports me watches on YouTube. So whether you listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or SoundCloud, Pandora, you know, it definitely means a lot. So please subscribe to wherever you listen. Also, follow the socials. Follow my Instagram. Follow my TikTok. I post pretty much daily. I post exclusive content there. That's where we can chat. We can, you know, debate. That's probably the best place to do it. So follow me there. And until next time, much love.